This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
The ride of your life is Eddie Hood.
Welcome back to Daddy Hood. I am honored to have Francesca and Jesse join me, the power couple. Thank you guys for being here.
Of course, thanks for power having couple. Us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
If you guys will entertain me. Okay. I'm working on my dad jokes. Here we
you
go.
You do a lot of dad jokes.
Oh, you do?
They just come to me though. They're not like preset.
Oh, see, I have to have
They're
help.
Just to embarrass Arlo.
Oh, got it. Well, I'm trying to practice on becoming that. I need to embarrass my kid.
You'll see. It'll just come.
It's natural.
Well, then I'm going to do it to you. It's for both of you. But Jesse, why don't scientists trust atoms?
I don't know.
Because they make everything up.
I think I've even heard that before. That's a good one.
I don't get it.
Because atoms make...
Make the world,
make
everything up in the world.
Yes, they make it up
so they don't trust them.
Also, dad jokes go over.
Because they're so simple
stupid.
That like people are like, wait.
Yes.
That was a good one.
That's good.
I'm going to use that on Arlo for sure.
I was just saying before we started rolling, you're so brave because it isn't easy. And I don't say that lightly because I'm sure everybody you run into is like, you're so brave and powerful. It's like it really takes a toll on you to be as public and as honest with people as you two have been. Can you tell me sort of how you made that decision to sort of lead so boldly?
I think, well, because we already do that in our lives in general, right? We have to show, I decided early on in my transition that I was going to be public about it. Huge decision. Looking back, I probably maybe should have thought about it a little more because it has like been really intense. But I think when we decided to do this IVF journey, we knew that this was just going to be another stage of our life, another step in our queer relationship that we knew people needed to see because we were like looking and there wasn't much out there. And so we were like, it's so crazy that you, even just our exact story, like a cis woman, a trans man, like we couldn't even find any other stories really posted about it. So we knew that we wanted to be people that showed it, showed the ups and the downs, whether it was a good thing that happened, a bad thing, a heartbreak, a win or a loss. So
yeah, I think it's really important to have representation because when I was growing up, there was no representation for someone like me, someone like him. You just didn't hear about it and you didn't see people like us trying to start a family. So it's really important, especially for young kids, to see that people like us exist and we're normal and we can start a family and it's just a little bit extra steps we can get there and that we're not different than anyone else other than a little bit. You know what I mean? So I think it's important for like little kids and especially adults to see.
Yeah. And I think with Francesca, with your just journey of being vulnerable and open, starting on reality television, I can relate because that's how I got my start too. And I love the industry and I love the different ways, but there's like pros and cons, right? That comes with it. Francesca, with your experience and your start, just like mine in reality television, how do you like find the boundaries of oversharing? I mean, have you gone past them at points and been like, that doesn't feel good. I need to sort of dial this back in. And then have you experienced that yet?
I think people just expect kind of you to overshare. And when you get into this kind of realm of you got your start on reality TV, people just feel entitled to information about you. And even if you're not comfortable with sharing it, people pressure you and they ask questions and it kind of just, you have to pick and choose what you're public about. And I think what we do is just think about things that have purpose and that are going to be meaningful to share and going to have a good response. So sometimes I'll post a video and I'll get like a negative response or people will be being really transphobic or really mean. And I'm like, okay, that was too much. And I'm going to delete that. And those people are not going to get that content anymore. It just depends on like if I get something like a bad response right away. But I've just been oversharing kind of everything because I feel like it's important to share our story.
Yeah,
for sure. Definitely. And Jesse, I mean, same to you. I mean, there's takes two to tango in a relationship. And that was something that I had to have a conversation with Jordan about too. I was like, just want to let you know, like, this is part of being with me too. It's like, there's a whole slew of people that are like, want to be in our relationship. Yeah. How have you dealt with that?
I mean, I think what helped was that when we met, her level was just insane, what like was going on with her life and what people wanted to know. But I was sharing my life. It was just on TikTok and Instagram. And I was dealing with a lot of like hate and a lot of like intensity. So then when we met and joined, I wasn't like going into it naive. I kind of had an idea.
Yeah.
It did, obviously, once we like joined together, it did make it a little more intense, because then people were like, not only wanted to know the fact that she's dating me, but then they're like, oh, and he's trans. Why would you do that? Like, so there's a lot of layers that go into our relationship, but
a lot more hateful eyes as well.
Oh yeah. It gets, honestly, like, not to sound like depressing, but it gets worse all the time, not better. So, but I think with the oversharing and stuff, I think we, you know, kind of discuss things that we're like, okay, that part we're going to keep for ourselves. That's for us.
Yep.
And then this is something that we think is really important for people to see.
Totally. I think one thing from like the reality television angle is like, yes, people, you have an option. You have the ability to now educate a portion of the mm-hmm. country. And the one thing that I loved about my experience with Netflix is it's international.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So not just our country, but like the world now all of a sudden has an opportunity to meet the beautiful relationship that the two of you have. I think, you know, it's a full circle moment for the both of us, because like we go mm-hmm. on and we're like searching and desperate for love, and we go on this show and it throws us through the ringer, both mentally and physically, and all of these changes in our lives. And then all of a sudden we end up, you know, part of the same community mm-hmm. and our journeys and paths, you know, link and end with happiness.
Yeah, exactly.
It led
us, even though it was crazy and intense, it led us to the person we were supposed to be with, which is really cute.
Yeah. So how long have you both been on the path to parenthood, as I like to call it?
We started officially last, I think it was July?
Yeah.
July or August.
It was last summer.
Last summer.
We probably had our first appointment maybe like a year ago or something. And then we started taking it more seriously in the summertime. We were looking into, well, we were planning our wedding originally and renovating our house, so there was a lot going on. And then we started booking the fertility appointments, and then we looked at each other one day and we were like, should we just scrap the wedding for now and just go all in on babies and do babies first? And we just decided, let's just throw out the wedding for now, we'll do it later, and we'll just go head on babies first. So that's kind of what we did.
And it kind of makes sense, because like when we were talking about babies and how we would have them and the different options that were there for us, I think it was like our like fourth date.
Yeah. We were like, this is the sperm donor we would use. Yeah. This is how we would do it. And we're using.
Oh, so you're in the details on your fourth date. Yeah. Not just like,
no, literally.
I want...
We fell, pretty hard, pretty fast.
Yeah.
But I remember we were driving and it got brought up and we started discussing it and how we would do it and what she would want and what I would want. And we were like making this whole life plan in that moment. And it's funny because we did exactly
that,
like almost 3 years later, almost exactly what we said then.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That was something Jordan and I bonded over immediately. It was just like, we both wanted to be dads.
Yeah.
And, but I can't say we like went that far. We did move our relationship very, very fast just because like,
it's, when you know, you know.
When you know, you know. Yeah. It sounds so cliche, and like people. And the moment I was not looking for a relationship, I met Jordan.
That's really sweet.
And that's what happened.
Those are the best kind, honestly.
It really is. So let's talk about the experience that you've had, because I can relate to what you said earlier. Was sort of like, are looking into this, and there's nobody talking about it.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of information. I've said this before, but my agent at CAA was the one who helped me build my fertility team, because I didn't have anybody else that I could turn to, because a lot of our friends are either straight or our queer friends don't want or don't have families currently. Yes. So it's sort of like nobody knows where to start.
Yeah. You are in this like weird middle ground. Like I have the same thing where I have like a ton of queer friends, but they're not there.
Right.
They don't want kids. And then I have like my siblings or my straight cis friends that are like, yeah, I have kids, but I don't need to do IVF. Or like, so you're in this like weird place where you're like, who do I go to find out? Where's that community? Where's that information? And that's what I think.
We kind of found that community that we have on the internet. Like I've made friends with people online just from posting about our journey, who I talk to now every day.
Yeah.
So that's like been kind of like the saving grace of this whole thing, because I actually have people that I can talk to. Not that I know them personally, I've never met them, but I feel like I have friendships that I can like vent to and get information from, which is nice. Yeah.
It's the community's incredible. Yeah. Just in the short time that I've launched Daddyhood, like immediately people, you know, and it's like they slide into your DMs so casually, but like they confide in you and it's so personal and so deep. And like, I feel so protective of the people in our community that are going through this because I mean, I've been, Jordan and I have been going through this for 2 years now, just like trying our way of how we wanted to go about it. And it's been ups and downs. And, you know, then I meet or hear and see this message of being like, my, you know, my partner and I have been on this journey for 5 years, 6 years. And it really puts things in into
That's
perspective.
What happened with us, because we thought it was so hard. And then someone would comment, oh my God, this is my ninth try. And we were like, that's,
I can't even imagine.
Because just even our first, you know, failed embryo transfer was so mentally and emotionally exhausting. So,
well, so let's talk about how you guys began. And then I'm going to lead you because I already know the answer because we were talking right before. But Jesse, your experience with going into a clinic and starting this process.
I feel like anyone in our shoes, the first thing you do is Google like LGBTQ friendly IVF clinic near me. And everyone I've talked to who has done this said the same thing. But when I did it, I just looked up and these companies were coming up. And so I'd make an appointment and I would go, and they just absolutely weren't like LGBT friendly at all. They were using my wrong pronouns. They were rude to me. They acted like the simple questions I asked, like as a trans man and freezing my eggs, like what are my options, were like these bizarre, weird questions. And I remember she, because she had, at that time, we were long distance. And I would call her and I'd be like, yeah, I don't like this place. Like, if this is how it's going to be, I don't know if I want to do this kind of vibe. It, like, gives you a bad taste in your mouth. And then, luckily, once we were actually, you know, really realistically, like, going and looking for where we went, we found somewhere really great. But it takes a lot of research. And I don't think it's something that people find on their first try.
No, you gotta kind of have to find the vibes. Like, as I was saying, we walked in and we saw pride flags everywhere and we knew, we were like, okay, there's pride flags and they have to be kind of friendly. And like, they want everyone in the clinic to know, even the straight people, that they are supportive of queer communities. So that's why we knew, we like saw them and we're like, okay, this is really nice. And they ended up being unreal. We have the best nurse. And there's like some people, like there's one or two people in the clinic that have, because on his chart, it says like,
like legal name and gender just got changed. Like, I think, what was that?
A few weeks ago.
Not even. Like,
congrats.
Maybe a week ago.
Yeah.
Like very, very new. And so on my medical charts, even at the LGBT center, it still says like my dead name and my, you know, it says female. And so, yeah, there was someone who accidentally just, it wasn't even at their fault. Yeah. They accidentally said like,
can I take a chance or an opportunity right now? Can you explain what a dead name is to people who aren't familiar with that term?
A dead name is basically the name that you were given when you were born that you don't identify with anymore. Okay. So mine is Jessica. A lot of trans people don't like to ever tell you or talk about it. I don't care that much. You know, I mean, I despise when someone actually calls me it. Yeah. But like I don't mind telling people that that's what it was. So
yeah, I'm just sure there's people who are listening that would be like, wait, what's a dead name?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's cool for them to understand, because that's the other thing I've learned, especially from people like, I come from Illinois. A lot of friends and family of mine still don't understand really how to get into conversations, and they're scared and they don't want to offend and they don't want to cross lines. So it's like, that's how I feel like what's up, my responsibility is like, okay, now here's an opportunity for you to learn.
Yeah.
Here's an opportunity for you to understand what our community goes through. So thank you for saying
that. I think if you're like us, if someone messes up the pronouns or does something accidentally or is genuinely curious,
you can tell,
and is like coming at you very nice, then we feel so comfortable to explain. And,
definitely.
But some people come out in like in a rude way or aggressive way, or
that's
kind of
like
a
judgy way.
That's what I always
say. You can tell when it's genuine and someone literally is like, I'm scared to offend you, but I want to know so I don't offend you.
Yeah.
That's different than when someone comes to you and I can tell they're intentionally saying my dead name or intentionally calling me a girl or whatever it is. You can usually sense, but I never have a problem with someone who just legitimately wants to educate themselves.
And I think if someone messes up pronouns, like just apologize and move on. Like don't make it a thing. Like if people ever mess up, like you just be like, oh, sorry, I'm gonna
That's what I always
on.
Tell like, my family, because my mom or somebody in my family will make this really big deal about it. And like, oh my God, and then the whole room hears and I'm like, you just turned something that could have been 2 seconds into like a whole night.
Right.
So I'm like, you know, I told her, I was like, just say, I'm sorry. I meant to say he, and then we move on.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great perspective, and it's incredible. Let's talk a little bit about the decisions that you guys made on your pass. And if there's anything that you want to hold to yourself, feel free just to say that, like, we're keeping this part private, or we're not really talking about this, because I know my husband and I sort of have specific things that we're sort of holding back to, being like, no, the public doesn't need to know this detail. How did you guys, I'm so curious about this fourth date now. I want to be like a fly on that wall on that fourth date. What was discussed? How did the conversation go? Was there a lot of synergies there? Did you actually make decisions on the fourth date for this?
I remember exactly where we were. Mm-hmm. I took him to like a gondola in Vancouver. We were in Canada. He flew out to see me because I got stuck in Canada because I had a visa issue. So he flew to Canada to see me. And I rented this, what was it? A G-Wagon. I rented this really expensive G-Wagon. I was trying to flex. I was trying to be cool. I
love it. And this is for my birthday too, by the way. I flew to Vancouver for my birthday this year.
So I drove him to like this mountaintop, and we were leaving the parking lot, and we were like looking at each other. I'm like, do you want kids? I'm like, yeah, I want kids. I'm like, if we were to have kids, my dad's adopted.
Yeah.
So we just started like, if we were to get a sperm donor, when would we tell the kids that we used a sperm donor? Mm-hmm. How would we tell them that you're trans? Or when would we tell them? Or would they know the sperm donor? Do we want the sperm donor to be involved in their life? Like, we kind of went over all the questions.
Someone who we know to be the sperm donor, we discussed that versus someone we didn't know at all, and the pros and cons, and how her dad felt being adopted, and not that it's exactly the same, but, you know, finding out that he wasn't biologically connected to the parents that raised him. And do we tell our kid when they're more like a teenager? Do we tell them when they're more younger, so then they kind of can get past it by the time they're a teenager? We don't know. So we discussed all of these things. Yeah. And I think by the end of it, we had like a pretty solid plan of like what we wanted.
Yeah, we knew we wanted to know the sperm donor. We wanted the kids to know that who the sperm donor was from when they were able to understand that we used a sperm donor.
In fact, you even called your dad.
Oh, yeah, I did.
I forgot about that. But she literally called him, put him on speakerphone, and was like, how old were you when you found out? And how old would you have liked to have been? And all these things. So we like got a pretty solid that day.
Yeah,
and honestly, like, okay, everything is pretty much
when they're like 3 or 4, we'll start to like tell them like about you. And then we'll start to tell them, okay, this is the sperm donor. You know who he is. You've seen him before because he's in our lives and he's going to be in our lives forever. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you know who he is. So we used his, I don't know what terms we're going to use. We're not going to use like juices or sperm or something.
Sample, but the collected sample.
Yeah, like he helped make you, but he's not your parent. We're your parents. But if you ever wanted to have a conversation with him, he's available. But we're your parents. And he just was a little extra sauce that we couldn't make on our own, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's cool with that too. We've asked him like when our kids were little, if they wanted to like ask you questions. He's like, yeah. So.
Which, by the way, I'm not an expert, and I think it's so important. Like, there is no right or wrong. Like, people building their families make the decision that they feel is best for their family.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think that's something that needs to be said, because oftentimes our community, especially, loves to judge and try to hold people accountable and all certain things. But like, expanding your family is a very personal thing.
Yeah,
and you shouldn't have to do it one way or another because that's what society tells you. So like for you guys to have that conversation so early on, and also for you to call your dad has to be so special.
Yeah. And I remember exactly like the details.
And intimidating. Wait, hold on, Jesse, we got to talk about this. Like, this is in the car ride on your birthday.
Yeah. I don't think, because I had never even met him. I don't even think he knew about me. Yeah. So I think
I
was in the background just like, oh, hey, I'm Jesse. I don't know.
I think my dad just wasn't taking me seriously. He's like, you're never.
He was taking the answer seriously.
Yeah, seriously, but I don't think he ever thought that we were like actually going to do this.
We knew. And we even discussed things like from the beginning, we were pretty dead set on twins. Like, we were like, oh, what about one of my embryos and one of your embryos at the same time? And then we could have, you know, one of each at the same time. And some of those like logistics have changed, but it's crazy because like a lot of the things we're doing are very lined up from that exact day. So,
yeah.
I mean, Jordan and I have had this conversation too, because kids are curious. So we have to be prepared. We already have like, we put a binder together already with our egg donor, pictures of our egg donor, and then also pictures of our surrogate. And I know like, obviously the surrogate has no shared DNA with our embryo and with our child, but they're curious. They want to know where they came from, and we want to be able to give them an explanation.
I think that's great for the kids as well, because my dad said what hurt him the most growing up was not knowing. Mm-hmm. He didn't meet his birth parents until he was like 35. So I think he was always so like...
His parents didn't tell him he was adopted.
Yeah, he knew from a young age.
Okay.
But he like had no contact to them, and he spent 35 years curious and not knowing and wondering, like, because his parents didn't tell him any information. He didn't have any photos. He didn't know where he was from. So he felt very, very curious until he like went behind his adopted parents' back, didn't tell them, found the birth parents, went to visit them.
Yeah.
And still, like, his adoptive parents are passed away, but they still don't, they died not knowing that he found his birth parents.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't want that experience for our child. I want them to know. And if they're ever curious, is to have all the facts in front of them so they don't feel the need to like,
and they can make the decision on their own.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Even raising Arlo, I have a 15-year-old, and something I've learned, and I've been, because I got Arlo when I was a teenager. I was in high school, so I had no idea what I was doing. But for some reason, there's this like innate thing inside me that knew I always wanted to give Arlo the information and not be secretive and not hide things from him. I mean, to an extent, obviously, I wanted to protect them. I'm not going to like tell them the scariest things of the world, but I wanted to give them this realistic view of the world and allow them to decide what to do with it.
Yeah.
And that really paid off in so many ways. And Arlo is so brilliant and like just mind blowing. And I literally think he's going to change the world. And with our kids, I want the same thing. I want them to have this information and not have this like secret floating around that they know is there, but nobody ever talks about it. That's never good for anyone.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of the person that's like, let's get it all out on the table and then we'll deal with it as it comes.
Yeah.
What does Arlo think of this journey you guys are on right now?
I think they're excited.
Yeah. I mean, they're 15. So it's like, you know, I wanted to give Arlo a sibling since they were little. Like, it was like my goal. I wanted it so bad. Obviously, did not work out with Arlo's other dad for about a million reasons.
Yeah.
The L and the LGBTQ at the time was the reason.
Yep.
And every time I found someone that I thought was like, oh, you know, this could be serious. It just never worked out. And we never got there. And then now, 15 years later, I have the person that I love and we're there. So I think Arlo's just like the teenager that's like, cool. Like,
they're really excited, I can tell.
Yeah, they're like, cool. Like, there's going to be these like little kids running around that I can like show cool music to and cool art and The Walking Dead. They're obsessed with The Walking Dead. And so they're like, I get to show them these cool things. And like, yeah.
Wait, Francesca, for you coming into this, Jesse, when did you tell Francesca about Arlo? And then what was your reaction? And were you excited and the responsibilities?
How we met, TikTok hired me to host a Pride event. And I was interviewing people over Zoom because it was still COVID. So when I met him with Arlo.
Yeah.
Like that day. Amazing. So they had dyed their hair. Arlo was red. You were blue.
We did like Pride hair.
Pride hair. And so I met both of them together.
Yeah.
And I was, before I met him, I was creeping his TikTok for about 3 days. And I just fell in love. I'm like, this guy's so cool. Like the coolest dad. Like your videos were so cute and unreal. I was like more nervous to meet Arlo because they seem so badass and like just their own little being. But yeah, I met them like basically from the beginning. So it was kind of like we were intertwined from the get-go.
Yeah. And because that's something we cover here too is bonus, whatever you want to call it, bonus family, like it's family and it doesn't have to be blood. It's chosen. It's however you want to shape your family. But there are people who sometimes enter relationships where like, that's a little bit of a deal breaker.
Yeah,
so,
no, I've dated people that were.
We're like, watching a show right now and this one dude like didn't pick the girl because she had a 10-year-old. But I'm like, that's just like a bonus. Like a 10-year-old is like a friend at that point. Like they're their own person. Like it should never be a deal breaker. For me, it was a bonus because it showed that you were capable of raising this small child by yourself when you were so young. Like it just proved how strong he was. And I was like, great, when we have kids, he'll like know the little things and I won't be as nervous because you've done it before. Exactly. So it was like a huge bonus for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible. How old was Arlo when you met?
12, 13?
12. Okay.
12, yeah. I think they were just about to turn 13.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the embryo transfers. And I want to ask just because I'll never be able to relate to the female experience.
Yeah.
And I won't. The most that I have is just like our conversations that we had during the egg retrieval process and also just with our surrogate, you know, leading up to those moments. How has it been with because you have to take medication leading up to it. I think there's a whole lot that goes into this that people don't understand. You're not just shoving an embryo into you. Like there is a lot of science that goes back to this. There's a lot of preparation, there's a lot of toll on your mental health as well.
Mm-hmm. I think so. First, we did his egg retrieval and then mine. So it's about 14 days of really intense hormones and then the surgery. They take out all your eggs. Mm-hmm. You could either freeze your eggs or make them into embryos with a sperm donor, which is what we did, or with if it's your partner's sperm or whatever.
Yeah.
So we turned his eggs into embryos and then my eggs into embryos.
Okay. We did our IVF rounds like with a little bit of a space in between because we knew it was gonna, like, I was like, you're gonna need to be there for me and then I'm gonna need to be there for you.
Yeah.
But even with that mentality, it was so much harder than we both could have expected.
The egg retrieval process, it's really mental. It's really physical. You feel kind of at your lowest point because your estrogen levels and your progesterone levels are like at, like 10,000. So you're usually at like 12 or like 200. So you really feel like depressed, you feel like there's no point in like life, you feel
it just really messes
your body feels horrible, you feel physically exhausted. I couldn't even walk to the bathroom without like falling over, like I was so faint.
She literally had to go to the emergency room because she was having trouble
because I thought there was like a hole in my lung. I'm like, my heart's gonna stop, like I genuinely did not feel okay. But then after the egg retrieval, you're chilling. The eggs are out.
Your hormones are back to normal. Yeah,
you're all doped up. You're like living life. You have your embryos, and then you find out how many survived, how many you have left. Some women don't even get any. Yeah. So they have to do that whole process all over again. We got lucky. I have enough. You have enough. So we got really lucky with him because he's been on testosterone for 4 years.
Yeah. They were like a little concerned about how many I was even going to get. They really recommend with like trans men to do it early on or before you start testosterone so you can actually have a good chance. And I did it 4 years in. So they were like, let's see, you know. And I got super lucky because I ended up with three embryos that are like fully usable embryos. And even a lot of like cis women don't get that many.
Yeah.
So I got super, super lucky.
Yeah, usually like they can take out like 20 eggs and by the end of the 20, you'll have three that are like usable and ready to go because the numbers just dwindle down.
We had 22 start. We split them 11 and 11, and then we ended up with three total as well.
Yeah, see, for both, exactly.
Just three? In total. Yeah.
Yeah. Which at the time was a little bit of like a letdown, but like people, I think, that have been in this along with this journey understand like that is the percentages. Like that's how it keeps eliminating.
Yeah.
So, I'm curious, did they have you have to tweak or stop your testosterone?
So they didn't say I had to. They never were like, okay, you have to. We recommend this. We had actually just gotten back from Europe and I had already missed my tee shot.
Okay.
So I was like, maybe I just won't do it just to give myself a better chance. That was like kind of a personal thing. It was really, really hard because mentally not only did I have to do that, and even just when I miss like a tee shot on a regular month, I feel weird and I feel like dysphoric. So I was going through that and then adding estrogen on. Yeah. So I was like literally like, I this is just crazy. This is so much harder than I expected. But yeah, like even hearing your numbers, like it just shows how lucky I was because I only ended up with, was it nine? When they, like eggs? I think eight or nine eggs,
yeah.
And three embryos. So like that ratio
that's
is like,
that's a very good
that's
ratio.
That's a great ratio.
Yeah. Like our doctor was like, it's kind of a miracle.
She
like,
said it was a miracle, yeah.
And I don't want to compare to your experience, your T-shot at all. So one of the reasons why I had no sperm alive was because I was on this synthetic testosterone from when I was playing football.
Okay.
I took some supplements that sort of threw my body hormones out of whack, and I had very low testosterone. So I was taking every 5 days, I was taking a shot.
You've heard about this.
And that was essentially, I've learned so much on this whole entire journey, but it was essentially creating some sort of like a birth control for men.
Okay.
Effect on me where it was telling my body I didn't have to produce any more sperm. So I that's why I asked, because I was like, I wonder if, because they had me get off, I had to go through 6 months of sperm rehabilitation.
Wow.
For my numbers to get back up to where the doctor was confident in freezing my sperm. So it's just, it's so interesting how like the science
comes down. It's crazy. My makeup artist is just about to do testosterone therapy because his levels are really, really low. His estrogen's too high. And he was born male, so he doesn't really know why it's happening, but he's about to start, and they recommended to him to freeze his sperm before he does it, which it's crazy that they didn't recommend that to you.
So that's the thing is like, and this goes on to a whole tangent that I don't even want to get into, but our sex ed, like education system, I would have loved to learn at a younger age in high school. I think I could have actually handled it in high school. If somebody would have, a teacher would have actually walked me through and said, hey, this is what the sex ed class is going to be. Instead of putting a condom on a banana, mm-hmm. can you teach me that, like, this supplement will sterilize you? Mm-hmm. And also, over the course of your years, the longer you're on it, will decrease the healthiness of your sperm and the way that you can reproduce.
Yeah.
I would have loved to make different decisions in my life if I would have had that information available to me through education. And instead, we sort of just, like, play it off, and or we're banning books and we're doing all of these things right now in our school system, where I'm just like, how about we talk about the health of the human body and what it's capable of, and what hurts it and harms it.
And these are the same people that want to protect kids, and they protect having kids, and they're anti-abortion, but they won't give people the information so that later on they don't have to do those things. Like, in fact, telling you as a high schooler that information would have actually protected your future children,
right?
You know, but they don't think of it that way at all.
So it's like, it's such a journey. So you guys get your embryos and you freeze them.
So they're in the freezer, and then we're gonna do a fresh embryo transfer, which is right after your IVF. You put one in right away. So after the surgery, 3 days go by and you put one in. So it kind of saves you a lot of the hormones. But most women can have a bad reaction to the IVF, where your ovaries are swollen like grapefruits. So it's really dangerous to put an embryo in, because you'll spend the first 3 months of your pregnancy, if the embryo does work, in the hospital. So we obviously opted against that. So we decided to wait until January, which was just happened. So we waited.
There was, like, a waiting, because to get her body back to normal and, like, healthy again. And then also, we are, like, very particular about when we want our baby born. We don't.
Wait, are we talking about astrology signs?
No.
Not as much of, like, we don't want them to have, like, a Christmas birthday or a January birthday. Because that's, like, rough on someone.
Yeah. I didn't want them to be born in August, because you and Arlo are in August. And for me, in my sake, I didn't want 3 birthdays in 1 month. Now thinking about it, I'm like, I should have just done it. But I wanted the baby to have its own birthday. I wanted you to have your own birthday.
She just thinks about every little. Yeah, it's the cutest thing ever. She'll be like, well, I was like, well, then, okay, you don't want August, because me and Arlo. What about September? No, because they're going to be going back to school. That's not fun. Okay, well, what about this? No, that's not good. Like, so she just wants the baby to have, like, the most perfect birthday, which I think is, like, the cutest thing ever.
Well, I have friends who have bad birthdays, and they hate it. And I'm like, I don't want that for them.
No, we have a friend who's born the day before New Year's Eve, and has never had a birthday cake. Like, her birthday just got skipped over her whole life.
Yeah. I always thought about the people who had December 24th and 25th birthdays.
Yeah. I would rather December 24th or 25th than the 28th. Because the 28th, no one's doing anything.
Right.
But that's what we decided. We're like, at least a Christmas birthday, we'll just kind of combine them. But, like, if you're, like, right after, you're, like, kind of just, like,
skipped over. So how many transfers at this point have you both done?
So I'm the only one doing the transfers.
Together as a couple. Sorry, I didn't mean as, like,
physically.
Because that's the other thing that I don't think people understand is, like, even, like, we don't answer the question of, like, whose embryo is going in? Like, it's not something that we're, like, discussing or disclosing to people, but, like, we're still very much, it's our children and it's our journey together. I do think it's important for people to know, like, it's still very much a bonding experience.
Yeah.
And I think what I would love to know from the two of you is, how has this been together as a couple?
I think we've gone through a lot of things in our relationship, from, like, reality shows coming out, to long distance, to breaking up, getting back together. And every time we've gone through something, it's made us stronger.
Yeah.
But the past, his IVF bonded us like crazy. My IVF bonded us like crazy. And then even just the embryo transfer, like, we've been unbreakable, but it just solidifies our bond even more, because you're really there for your partner at, like, their lowest of the low. And you go through, like, kind of like the hardest things you're ever going to go through together, and it really just makes you so much stronger. Our relationship is, like, perfect. We, like, can sense things about each other just by, like, if you were to, like, blink weird, I would know what's wrong. I would know.
She's like, what's wrong?
Like, if he's hungry, if something upset him, like, I can just, we sense things about each other just because we've been through it so much that we're just, like, perfect now.
And this experience, like, I think with cis couples just having a baby, let's say the old-fashioned way, they bond once the baby's there. Maybe they bond during the pregnancy, but I think for couples like us, we bond, you know, at this stage while our embryos are still in the freezer, because you have to go through so much. It's all those little steps. It's those ups and downs. It's like watching her go through some of the hardest things. Even just, you know, even just not the mental, like watching her have to inject herself so many times to, she's bruised and she can't even sit down, or she's taking so many vitamins that she's going to throw up, and she's doing a million things. She's drinking pomegranate juice, even though it makes her sick. And from the moment she wakes up to the moment she goes to sleep, she's doing things for this baby. And I can't not watch her and, you know.
Cute.
Made me a little emotional, but.
You're so cute.
And I don't think people understand the cycle. Like that, and what I mean by that is, like, doctors tell you, and you would know this better because, but I've been parts of these conversations throughout this, like, low stress. That was like the number one. But when they say low stress, and then they get into, but you need to take all these medications and then all these, and they task you with a stressful scenario.
Yeah.
And I think it's, that's like the cycle that I see here is they're like, tell you to relax and to be stress free, but then
you can't relax.
You can't.
Mm-mm.
And what challenges have you faced that were maybe unexpected or you weren't expecting from this?
I think when we went into our fertility journey at the beginning, about a year ago, we were so naive. We thought it was going to be so easy. We thought we were just going to take some eggs out, put them back in. We were going to have twins, one you, one me. And it was going to be like all hunky-dory, really easy. And every time we go to the clinic, like most of the time we leave crying because we find out so many things. And there's so many hurdles to get over. You just don't realize how actually physically hard it is. And so, I mean, we had an embryo transfer that failed. But other than that, we don't have fertility issues. So I can't even imagine how hard it is for people who, like you, have actual like issues with like producing eggs and producing sperm. Cause I didn't have, I mean, that it was really hard process for to produce the eggs, but I still got them. You know what I mean? Right. So I can't even imagine the people that can't get the eggs or can't get the sperm, like how emotionally taxing that would be. Cause that on top of everything it is to like just have this baby is just, it's so much.
Yeah. Where have you found, on the flip side of this question now, where have you found your community? Where have you found your support? Where have you found your healing to those twists and turns?
So I am kind of really glad that we've been posting about it online because I get so much reassurance from people in my comments and people in my DMs. I've been FaceTiming with doctors from different parts of the world. I get nurses in my DMs giving me advice, women who have gone through it, people who have gone through the exact same thing as me. They're mainly like, they're in like heterosexual relationships and they're going through IVF. So they're not necessarily queer, but they've gone through everything that I've gone through. So having that community, like anytime I get curious or have a question or feel weird about something, I'll just like we posted a video asking our like audience a question and comments are flooded with all these answers and these new techniques that we didn't even know about. Like there's so many things I've learned that I've brought to my clinic and I said, hey, can I do this, 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 this? They're like, oh yeah, we can do that. I'm like, why didn't you tell
me? No, like HR clinic, like we really do love them, but I just think this is how like Western medicine is. I think doctors are trained to, for exactly what they're trained for, and they don't really go outside of it. Yeah. So the things we learned, and we like even what got her like lining thick enough to do the embryo transfer, that was stuff we learned from other people online or by Googling.
Yeah.
Pomegranate juice, is that what you said?
Yeah, and like castor oil packs. Acupuncture, which I, you know, for her, she's been more of like in the comments, but for me, what helped me a lot was messaging other trans men who are married and have like two kids that I know and being like, what did you go through? What worked for you guys? And like, actually just texting back and forth and hearing like other people in my exact situation. That's really what helped me a lot. Like when I was like having hard moments, I texted like, hey, did you guys go through this? Oh yeah, we did that exact same thing happened to us. This is what we did. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I feel like you're going to tap into a huge community with this podcast just by getting people that are in similar experiences with you. And maybe you'll learn a lot that you didn't even know. And like you'll be able to bring something to your doctor and say, hey, can I do this to do this? And then you'll be able to learn so much about like your own situation. Everything
I already have. Yeah. I mean, my perspective, not only just with fatherhood and daddyhood and trying to get into the spirit of becoming a dad. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much about my community. Yeah. I've learned so much about me. Mm-hmm. I've learned so much also about the straight community.
Mm-hmm.
And like in a weird way, you know, as much as there are, as much hate as there is out there, my faith in humanity feels somewhat restored.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it is beautiful to see people bond over families.
Yeah, definitely.
All sorts of families.
Yeah.
Adoption, you know, foster care, chosen family. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know people who, that's my mom and dad. And like, we're not blood related, but like that's what I call them and this is why.
Yeah.
It's been so cool to have these experiences and also just mm-hmm. to sit and talk to humans about their experiences. So yeah. Where do you think, I mean, can I just ask the obvious question that probably everybody's thinking is like, when is the next transfer? Are we gonna wait a little bit? Is the birthday, we have to line the birthday up?
No, so the birthday's still good.
Okay, cool.
Check. We have one more try until the birthday gets on Christmas. So we're I just don't want a Christmas baby. I mean I would be cool with a Christmas baby, but I know the baby wouldn't be cool with being a Christmas baby. Just because
once
I know
they're older now. When they're younger,
we'll give them the coolest birthday ever. But once they're like 16 and they have to rely on their stupid friends who aren't going to give them a good birthday.
Like flying home for Christmas or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
But
so we went to our fertility clinic a few days ago, and from my other transfer that I just did that didn't work, my progesterone levels are still a little high. So we're going back on Thursday. And if they're lower, we're going to start the medication and do the transfer in 2 weeks.
Amazing. And yeah. I think what I've learned, and I would love for you to speak on if you know it too, is what's interesting is they can gauge all the science and the information from your body and just sort of tweak it to make this next one a little bit better. Is that mm-hmm. is that accurate?
Yeah, you can do a lot of things and a lot of testing and a lot of like basically blood tests to figure out why your embryo transfer didn't work and things that you can change for the next one. Yeah. So it was good. Like the first time we just implanted one embryo, we're going to implant two for this one. So hopefully that gives us a higher chance. If we have twins, we have twins.
Yeah, that's what we decided. We had to like kind of mentally be like, okay, if we do this and it is twins.
We could even have quadruplets.
Yeah, technically, because they can split.
They can both split.
It's a 30% chance of the embryo splitting. Yeah. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're, but we kind of mentally had to be like, could we do it? We're like, yeah. Because I think we just want this baby so bad that we're like, okay, if it's two, if it's three, whatever happens.
Yeah.
I'm hoping two max just because two sets of arms. But so we're, we're
a lot
like
of people
a few days away.
Put in one embryo and it splits to two. Yeah, it's like common if you didn't know that.
We did. Yeah. because when we went to, you know, went into our clinic and we start the conversation with our doctor, he explained like embryos, it is common that they can split off and become twins. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I remember how cool I was like, oh, so maybe much as you want to plan, as many decisions as we get to make, which by the way, I love the fact that you're being honest. You're like, there's a window of like time. Because like I said at the beginning, there is no right or wrong. Like you guys are building your family, you're choosing your family, and you have to go through all of these hoops. You have to pay all of this money. You might as well make the decisions that you can make.
That's what I was going to say is like, I think it's like that little bit of control we can have. It's like, well, let's at least like curate this how we want it to be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we also like a lot of people don't get those opportunities to like make sure their baby has a great birthday or like whatever it is. So we might as well take advantage of it. And hopefully our kid one day will be like, thanks. I love my birthday. It's a great birthday.
Yeah.
I love that. So you guys have both spoke on how your community is found in comments and on social media. Knowing right now that some of them are tuning in to listen, it's a lot easier than responding to every single one of those messages. What message would you have for them?
I think if it's people who are in the position of maybe they're younger and they know one day they want to have a family, I think it's that you absolutely can. It's absolutely possible. I had so many moments when I was younger where I was like, you know, luckily I had Arlo, but I was like, this is going to be it. Like, I'm never going to find a person. I'm never going to have more kids. I'm never going to hold another baby in my arms. That's mine. And I always just kept moving forward and being true to myself. And this is the happiest time of my life. Like, it doesn't get better than this. So if there is like a younger person, that's the message I want them to know. Like, you can absolutely have whatever dream life you want.
Yeah.
I think I would just say like to all like the moms that have been in my comments, like just thank you for all the advice. And I feel like it's made even just my community so much stronger because we've bonded, like we've trauma bonded literally.
Yep.
Like, because we've all been through it and everyone has been through, people have been through a lot harder journeys than us. Like we have it easy, so easy.
Comparison.
One IVF each, just one failed transfer so far. So we have it a lot easier than most women do. So I just think finding women to relate to has been so amazing. And I get excited to post about it because I'm going to learn and I'm going to be able to connect with people, which I wasn't able to do before because I've had this platform for 5 years now and I've had the audience, but I didn't feel connected to my followers like I do now. Like I feel like I've made friendships and bonds that I don't even have with my friends in real life. Like, I talk to people that I know online more than I talk to, like, my best friends about this stuff because they can't relate. So it's great having people that can relate.
Oh, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I thought, like, I genuinely, I've been pitched podcasts over the last five years for me. And they're like, you should do this. You should do this. And then this one came and I was like, this is a purpose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this makes me feel like I am contributing to society, contributing to our community. I feel like I'm doing something good for my people.
Yeah.
And that you just literally articulated something that I didn't really know how to say. And that's such a great and beautiful way to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Before the two of you go, can you please leave us with some advice? I know you just said like a lot of beautiful, amazing words to the followers, but if you have any tips, any tricks, any advice, any quotes, anything to leave us with a positive note.
Tips and tricks. I think it would be depending on if it's someone going through an IVF journey or something similar to us. Mm-hmm. Maybe just always. So someone said this to me the other day. This girl that I talked to in Australia, she's, I think, 14 weeks pregnant now, and she had 6 miscarriages. So remember, she said to me, once our embryo transfer failed, she said, this ended bad, but it will end with you having a baby. So even though it's not right now, it will end like that. So I think if you're going through a hard time, it's just temporary and it will end the way you want it to end. Like, you are going to be a mom and you will have babies eventually. So even though it's taking a little bit longer, that's the end goal and that will happen. So I think if anyone's going through a hard time, just focus on the end goal, because even though it's taking long to get there, it will happen.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
Yeah.
I think my advice would be that I wish I kind of knew before I got into this, especially if it's like someone queer listening, is that I think do a lot of research on your own. I wish I would have done that more before I went in. I think I was so like, you know, at the time it's 2023 and this has been going on for forever and I really trusted the doctors. And like, once again, we love our clinic, but there were so many things that like we found out by talking to people online, by Googling things, by reading like medical journals. And I think if you're about to do this, I would definitely recommend that. It would have actually saved us a lot of steps if we would have done that in the beginning.
Amen to that. And just for everybody listening, that is the reason why I started this too, partially. And I'm going to have doctors, I'm having surrogates come on, I'm having egg donors, sperm donors. I'm trying to have a voice. My lawyer, my fertility lawyer came on. I want this to be a hub for people to come to say, I have questions about fertility contracts or like what it means to be a sperm donor, egg donor, surrogate.
Surrogates,
or even like bringing in holistic people, because a lot of the doctors don't, they won't even bring it up to you, and acupuncture is what saved us. So I would just even bring someone like that on and be like, tell people all the tricks.
like hopefully daddyhood could be a lot of information, a lot of a
no it will
it's needed. It's needed.
I think you also, people need things to like, people need people to advocate for them that aren't just doctors, because doctors don't necessarily have all the facts. Our clinic, every time we tell them something, it's like, oh, I've never heard of that. Or, oh, really? I didn't know that. And I'm like, what? You don't know this, but it's because it's not medication. Doctors know medication, but you need someone to give all the other information of everything that you can do to make your uterus ready, to make your eggs healthier, to make your sperm healthier. That's holistic as opposed to just the medication route.
Yeah.
Our community is powerful.
Yeah.
When we come together,
definitely.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, Francesca and Jesse, thank you so much for coming on Daddyhood. What's up, guys? If you want more exclusive behind-the-scenes content, more access to me, all of the fun things, sign up for my Patreon right here. We'll link it out. I promise you, you do not want to miss this. Head on over and join me on Patreon. The ride of your life is Daddyhood.